All right. Hey there, this is Bram Kanstein and you're listening to Bitcoin for Millennials. Together with my guests on this podcast, I go on a journey to discover how our current financial system works, why it's flawed, and why Bitcoin is the most relevant technology that you, my fellow millennials, should understand and adopt. In this episode, I'm joined by Jeff Booth. He's an entrepreneur and thought leader who's lived at the forefront of technology change for 20 years. Currently a general partner at Ego Death Capital, Bitcoin-only venture fund. He's known for his insights on technology, economics, and the future of deflation. In his book, The Price of Tomorrow, he argues that advancing technologies will inherently lead to deflation and that society should embrace rather than resist this trend. When I started this podcast, Jeff, I had a list of 50 people that I was dying to talk to, and you were in my top five. So I'm super excited that in episode 10, you're already here, man. So welcome. Thanks.
Well, thanks for having me, Bram. Pleasure.
Thanks. Yeah, I wanted to start with a question. I actually had a conversation again today where this term theft came up, and in previous episodes, and this conversation was about Bitcoin and economics, etc. And in previous episodes, I've talked about how difficult it is when, like, you talk to a newcomer to Bitcoin and you talk about inflation and debasement and that they are in essence theft. And in my experience, like, people find that a really hard word, and sometimes they tune out, maybe because it's so confrontational or something. But I also have heard you use the word theft a lot. Can you explain, like, why inflation and debasement are actually theft? I think you're the person that can explain this most rationally, probably.
Yeah, I think it. And by the way, I understand why people would not want to see it that way. It challenges some of their beliefs and then they want to push back. So I totally understand and have empathy for people sitting inside a system. But when you realize that the free market is deflationary, right? And that's not a guess. Like, prices fall to the marginal cost of production. We have exponentially rising productivity because of technology. And by the way, a couple of insights to that. If you measured that productivity through the entire manipulated system, you wouldn't see as much productivity. But mm-hmm. if you measured productivity where it's happening, you have exponential technology. Yeah, that's driving
productivity. Is that also, sorry to interrupt, but is that also, I saw a great chart on Twitter of someone who had the price of the NASDAQ in dollars. That goes up, obviously. But against M2, like in real value, it actually goes down and it's under the value of the tech in 2000, which arguably we now have better technology, right? But it's worth less.
This is why it's so hard to see, because people are measuring through a system with the error code in it. So what you have to do is you have to use first principles to understand what would happen if there was no error code, if there was no theft or debasement or anything else. So why I find it easier just to talk about technology in that way is you can have some first principle discussions. You can say, do prices fall to the marginal cost of production over time? The answer is yes. Like, no matter what, over a long enough time horizon, prices fall to the marginal cost of production. Then you can ask, what is the marginal cost of production of a line of code? And then you can ask, what is the marginal cost of production for lines of code written by other lines of code? And you can see where we're going and why technology drives. And if number one is true and number two is true, then that means if you had a honest ledger or an honest monetary system that didn't debase currencies, that didn't change the rules, didn't print more currency units, then prices would fall every year and society would live on top of that prices falling every year. Some places prices would fall faster, some places and it would run at the rate of technology in the free market. And so every year, based on just that being true, you would probably gain, people would have to work 5% less, get 5% more each year, just by staying standard. So everyone on the planet would benefit. You'd be getting richer, but that's not the system we live in. Right. So that's a system that would be true in a system that couldn't be manipulated. And the system, but this is important because you have to stop this. So that's true. And what I'm about to say is true. If you allowed a credit-based system to collapse, if you let a credit-based system prices fall, then the debt becomes, in real terms, you can't pay back immediately, and the whole thing keeps falling. So it keeps falling. So we have to explore that system too. And that system that we live in, or we price most things from today, has about $400 trillion of insolvent debt. So the debt's already insolvent, right? If you tried to pay back the $400 trillion at $1 a second, it would take 12,683,000 years to pay back. But it's worse than that, because that's assuming you could pay it back. And you have to ask yourself, where are the taxes to pay back the debt from your calculator app that you use every day now? Right? It's free. The point is the technology is driving these things to free, and that you create the abundance based on that technology. So what's happening is the ledger is being manipulated at a greater and greater rate, that the theft, and it's transferring that wealth from people who, because inflation is wage deflation, and it's transferring that wealth from people who have assets to people, or from people who don't have assets, so their wages are going down in real terms because to try to pay back the debts that is already insolvent, and it's transferring it to people who hold assets or government to be able to do that process, and it is theft because you don't have a vote in it. You don't so both these things are true, right? So we say we live in a and so one system, what it would look like under an honest system, and what it does look like under the system that we drive all of our decisions by. Now the problem is inside that system that we live in and we price everything by, we don't see how great an impact that is on our lives. We don't, so we just trust all of these institutions. It's all like it always used to be. And so these things are true at the same time. What's happening with Bitcoin is if you're measuring Bitcoin in price from the manipulated system, then you're actually thinking about trading Bitcoin. What's actually happening is we have two different worlds emerging. One that's pricing what I just explained that can't be fucked with. And so if you're measuring in Bitcoin, prices will fall into for you forever. And if you're pricing in the existing system, prices will rise forever.
Is it then also that because we changed the technology of money with Bitcoin to a protocol, to two lines of code? Don't want to say it's free, but it also goes down to
Marginal
at
cost of
least
product marginal cost of production, but actually that's true right now. You can see hash rate going up, right? That's
So instead of also the value of the old money becoming less and less and less, it's the new money that's just going up forever then.
So I'd like to look at it the other way, because if you think it's going up forever, you're measuring it
In the
from the
old
value in the old
thing.
system, right? And that's what most people do. And so if you do that in Argentina today, Bitcoin's hitting all-time records. Now, are the people in Argentina necessarily richer because their money's losing value at that rate? And so if you measure in the debasing currency, you're automatically defaulting to measure your world in the broken on the broken ledger. And if you're measuring in the in this thing that can't be manipulated, you're automatically measuring your world in economic law that prices fall to the marginal cost of production over time.
And how do we then take a step to an abundant future? Like, if this is the cause, what will it result in? Like, why will the future then be abundant?
So because The incentives are exactly opposite from the existing system. And most people carry their baggage from just like you're doing right now in pricing, right? The most people carry their baggage from the old system on how it looks under misaligned incentives to the new system on how it doesn't, And they're totally different systems that work almost 180 from each other. One concentrates wealth in very few hands and power, and eventually destroys destroys what you believe your democracy is. Mm-hmm. Because money is superordinate to laws. If it wasn't, then the places with the most broken money in the world would have the best laws protecting their citizens. Why doesn't it look like that? So you can see what I'm saying is true, right? Mm-hmm. And now you just have to ask, how fast are we destroying our money here? And you can see how fast laws will break down and division of society will break down as a result. And all of these things are consequences of broken money that get worse and worse. So you can ask yourself, where are you on that lever? You don't vote in your country for how much money is manipulated.
Yeah, correct.
And as that becomes a greater and greater stealth tax or a repressive tax that hurts some people in favor of others, then it becomes more and more of the amount of revenue the government's making that's based on theft. And as it becomes more and more based on, so you don't have a vote in one of the most important drivers of wealth in your life. So how could you say that you actually live in a democracy if you don't have a vote in one of the most important drivers? And you can see by that construct why all over the world individual rights and freedoms are going down, because they have to go down over time to support theft that has to grow exponentially to be able to pay a debt that is already insolvent. Yeah. So, and that leads to a control function out of government. So, and so all of these things that we see all over the world and why it's really why people get trapped in them from the existing system is they make them stronger through their actions. They think that there's a solve by dividing society, right? So how would you get elected in a system that looked like that? You would prey on a whole bunch of people that that said, I can solve your problem. It's those bad people that do that. You divide society, and you would sit on top of that by dividing. And then when it couldn't fix it because it's based on broken money in that, and you've already divided your society, you would have to create a bigger enemy elsewhere. Right. And you'd have to convince your society to go to war to fight for the thing that they believe in to be able to create a war somewhere else. It's why these things are pretty natural in what we're having today, and why the world gets pretty frightening from the system that's decaying. And so how do you solve that? You just impose. Bitcoin imposes a discipline. It's becoming a peer-to-peer internet backed by energy.
Yeah.
And you impose that discipline and the incentives that creates that have more and more people walking across the bridge to create the new system. We're still really early. This system has more power in our lives, and we feed it. The one we're in, the decaying system, and we feed it by yelling at it, by marching against it, by voting for it and everything else. Yeah. And people don't realize that they could stop paying for $400 trillion of debt today, walk across to the new system and start building onto that system, and their energy, every single one of us, what you're doing with this podcast, might touch a bunch of people that then go out and touch a bunch of other people. And what it means is the future doesn't just happen to us. We create it. And so what you're doing right now, what I'm doing right now, is creating a brighter future by moving to Bitcoin and building on top of an honest ledger. And as more and more people do, the world just changes.
Yeah. So now I'm thinking, to go back to the question about the theft, I think it's interesting, right? Because when you say theft, or when I say theft sometimes in my conversation, you know, it sounds like my opinion, right? Like a radical opinion. But I think how you explain it is just an objective realization and description of how it currently works. And also, it's so far away from most people because it's been abstracted so much, right? And yeah. And when you put that next to the system of Bitcoin, where I really love the term, you know, in Bitcoin you follow the rules and in the other system you follow the rulers, right? And I think that perfectly illustrates it, and it's a true 180 of ultimate, almost engineered truth, I always say, about Bitcoin, right? Or it's very transparent versus layer on layer of abstraction, and therefore also, yeah, just a hard understanding of what am I actually participating in. So, and then when someone says it's theft, you know, that's obviously an instant confrontation with, you know, whatever the unknowing belief is, probably, of the current system, right?
Is it, why I like to walk through this from a first principles discussion on both is because both these things are true. Like, and which, so
yeah,
your life, because of your beliefs and how you see the world, will be true for you, even if my life and my beliefs in the world would depict a different truth for me, right?
Yeah.
But if I tried to impose my belief on you by yelling at you, you probably wouldn't. The last thing you would do is change, and worse, if you were taken from the most, right, and you were at the bottom of the social economic ladder, and you couldn't pay your bills, you couldn't pay food and everything else, you would be more susceptible to somebody who said, "I'm going to solve your problem and give you money."
Even though, work also, exactly, right?
But you'd be more susceptible because you can't think through first principles. Mm-hmm. When you're in, or it's really hard to think about thinking in first principles, and what I'm able to think and what we're talking about right now, when you're scared for your life or your family's life, or you have emotion driving you. So the thing that creates the fear that keeps people stuck is the same thing that gives the power to the system to keep them stuck. And if somebody outside that system yells at them or says it's theft from that, you're not meeting them where they are. They're in a different spot. You might have already done the work. You understand what this looks like. And it's easy to think that everybody in the world has done that work because you have. And it doesn't look like that. Most people in the world are stuck in the system, feeding it, making it stronger, because of their fear.
Yeah. This is a nice leeway into another question I had. So your firm is called Ego Death Capital. I love that name. And you chose it for a reason, of course. You know, like you actually just said it, you know, a lot of people say that to understand Bitcoin, you need to do the work. Part of doing this work, in my opinion, is like lots of discovery and self-reflection and reprogramming, you know, around personal beliefs that you used to operate from, but also like unconscious beliefs that, you know, were just that you just gathered along the way. How do you define this work, and what does it have to do with ego death?
So you're right. A bunch of these, for me too, in Bitcoin, understanding that a lot of, just because of I was born in a certain place, gave me a massive advantage. And the reason I was born in a certain place that essentially where it was at the top of the theft of a monetary system, gave me the same advantage as somebody in Africa that was at the bottom of the theft of the monetary system gave a disadvantage to. So I had a hard time because through previously, I believe, this is true too. It's not that I didn't work extraordinarily hard, learned a bunch, made a ton of mistakes, created and everything else. But I realized that I had an easier time on that ladder than somebody who was born somewhere else. So it was just on the inverse of my privilege. And so those were lessons that as I went down the Bitcoin rabbit hole that I just had to come to terms with. And I really, what would it look like on a new system? And on a new system, it would, talent is globally distributed. Opportunities are not.
Mm-hmm.
Now on Bitcoin, opportunities are globally distributed. And so if somebody wants to fight that, they're going to be fighting talent all over the world that has just as much opportunity as they do. But the opportunity in that set on top of Bitcoin heals the world, makes the world better. And so the output of that opportunity means prices fall for even people that aren't on Bitcoin.
Yeah.
Right. So, yeah. So it's a, it's just an honest ledger that moves to, more and more of the productive capacity of the world to us. Now there's absolutely incredible businesses that can be built on that as they deliver value to other people. Just like there were incredible businesses that were built on top of the technology stack that was TCP/IP, HTTP, this Riverside we're on right now is one of them that takes advantage of that technology stack that wasn't available until entrepreneurs went and created a valuable business on top of it. The iPhone is one we take for granted that it wasn't always there, but it uses the same technology stack. All of these opportunities on top of this technology stack, now that you have a decentralized secure base layer in Bitcoin, kind of the asset, but with Lightning, Fediment, a whole bunch of other things that are developing on layer three, you're having an explosion of opportunity that's building on top of that base secure layer that is going to change the world. And it's going to bring people in. It's going to get easier and easier to use. And more people are going to race to it because it provides value in their lives.
Yeah. I find it so fascinating that also when you share this, you know, like talent is evenly distributed and opportunity is not, like, it for a lot of people, including people who call themselves progressives, quote unquote, this is what they would want, right? Like have equal opportunity for anyone, perhaps get to a real meritocracy, you know, where, you know, people who do the best at their job, whatever it is, you know, they get rewarded the most. And while you, and also in the book, you know, you have a strong case for deflation and, you know, lowering the cost through technology. It's generally viewed, though, like a bit negatively, right, in economic circles. But like, why do you think people are so against
because they haven't done it at the first principles nor understood. I would say in what I watch, very few people think in first principles. Very few people think in second and third or fourth order effects of changes.
Yeah.
In other words, they're predicting the present forward.
Yes.
They're not predicting the future because of that. To predict the future, you have to really think in first principles. You have to understand human action and when something changes benefits so greatly. What do people do as a result? And then what's the corresponding action of the existing system? What does it do? So if you just think if this is imposing prices fall the marginal cost of production and we have exponentially increasing productivity, that it's imposing that reality on the world protected by energy. As long as it stays decentralized and secure, everything I just said is inevitable. It's repricing the world versus the other way around. But people won't believe that, and they'll price it from their existing system, and they'll give more power to it. And so what would the existing system do as more and more people leave to build on the system of truth, hope, freedom in the existing system? What would it do? So remember, the existing system, government gets bigger and bigger, and people say, those people. It's only us. There are no those people. There is no they. It's us.
It's also, I don't know what the quote is, but it's also like that we don't realize how much power we actually have, or like how few people are actually currently in power, right? Like
but
how few
actually,
of us it needs.
It's only us.
Yeah.
And so as more and more people move to the honest system and transact and move more benefit there, and it gets stronger and stronger and stronger through the network effect on the base layer, people holding in self-custody, and the network effect on layer two or three, more and more value accruing there. And it's the incentives are better there. More and more people move.
Yeah.
And then what would the existing system do? Print money faster? And so as it prints money faster and destroys people within the existing system, more people move.
Yeah.
And what would it do then? Print money faster and less base. So this will take a long time to play out, but people don't realize how much power they have into just tuning out of the existing system that is based on a lie.
And to illustrate that, like what is your timeline there then? How far do we have to zoom out?
So when people ask me this, I'm actually honestly confused by the question. And I'll tell you what.
I don't want but
I'm actually honestly confused by the question, because, and I'll tell you why. My lake house cost $1.4 million 3.5 years ago, and it cost 300 Bitcoin. My lake house cost $2 million this year, right now, and it cost 50 Bitcoin.
Yeah.
So people are waiting. Well, it's happening. Mm-hmm. It's just so in other words, I'm already living in the future, and other people. And so a lot of people thought
like that, we can go to the future now.
Right? Yeah, everybody has a choice right now to go to the future. So the whole bunch of people around my lake house and all those people think their house just went up $600,000.
Yeah.
And what really happened, it fell by 250 Bitcoin.
Yeah.
And so, and that's going to continue, and it's going to continue forever. So, so it depends what world you want to measure in, and all, again, all of the war and divide and everything else that we see out of the world today is a result of the system that we live in.
Yeah.
That people are giving more power to. So when, right now.
Yeah, that's great, because I wrote down another question, because you also talk about, you know, what the generational impact of adopting something like Bitcoin could be. And, you know, we hear Greg Foss say we do this for the kids a lot. And I wanted to ask you, like, how can we influence the future by acting now? But the answer is act now.
Act now. Just start, like, spend more time here. Spend more. I keep saying this. Your impact, every one of our impact, we matter. We touch people with your voice, you matter. So if you want to spend more time in the existing system, yelling at that system, you're impacting it. You're making it stronger. If you want to spend more time in this system with people that are building this new system, you're impacting it, making it stronger. And so spend more time in the new system, you'll be happier.
Yeah. I totally agree with that, obviously. But I do also understand that it's hard for people who are in the current system and maybe are doing the work or are total oblivious, right? Like, how does one start, right? Like, is that just saying enough is enough when you buy a banana for $5? Or how do you see that?
Oh, I just lost you for a sec, Bram.
Oh, no, I said, you know, like, I totally agree with you, obviously, right? But there's a lot of people who are in the current system and they are oblivious, or maybe they start doing the work. You know, what in your view is like a trigger for someone to actually start, or like what should they ask themselves first? If not, you know, when they buy a banana for $5, they think, you know, this is ridiculous. What is going on?
Yeah, so... I can't tell you so that's why I wrote the book, because I knew people couldn't see this. And I figured by tying it to technology, to they could understand how fast technology was moving in their lives, how much abundance it was trying to give them. They would start to question some of the other things why does the world look like this? So to me, asking questions or starting where somebody is trying to solve their own problem, meeting them where they are is the place to, it is the place to ask the question instead of telling somebody. So yeah. when somebody can explore what for them, why, when they can come to the conclusion themselves, then it sticks. People don't want to be told. They typically fight back against being told something.
Yeah, I fully agree. I think like 6 months ago, I really understood that I should switch from telling to asking.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
What's the most compelling like counter argument that you've heard against these views, and how do you respond to them?
I haven't heard one yet. I did a debate with George Gammon the other day on Peter McCormick, and by the way, I like George a lot, but he's looking through the system of the past, or I suspect he's looking through the system of the past, and he says human nature will keep it there. Well, my question is how. How would human nature keep it there? Because by voting, so if human nature says, I'm going to vote for more manipulation of money, Bitcoin doesn't care, right? Yes, that system will fail faster, but Bitcoin keeps on imposing a discipline until people realize they can't fight with it. It's an honest ledger that it keeps on posing that discipline. So, well, there's some interesting kind of inside those arguments why people have their own beliefs. I haven't seen one yet that counteracts what I just said about if it stays decentralized and secure, that ultimately it's repricing everything else.
Yeah.
Now I'm open to the fact if somebody wants to, why I keep saying if is for two real reasons. It's not that I'm worried about it one iota. The first reason is I want people to try to attack it in that vector to be able to say, so they can understand how decentralized and secure it is. And the second reason I say it is that by running a node, you probably run a node, I run a node and everything else, that I would have to act against my best interest to change it. And so call it the hundreds of thousands of other node runners that are all private behind Tor networks and everything else all over the world would have to do the same thing. And so I try to say, why I say if too is to push on there to say, how would we have to be tricked to be able to go against our self-interest and to keep to understand that that's probably the only attack vector.
Yeah. Yeah. I would recommend everyone to actually listen to that episode. I really enjoyed it. And I also thought it was interesting that, you know, a lot of your rebuttals were the same all over again, right? Like, as you said, if it stays decentralized and secure, then it will just stay as is. And I agree that the answers of George, or perhaps anyone looking at it from the other system, now that I think of it, is interesting. It's like it's an abstract answer abstracted on another abstraction, right? And basically George says that we cannot trust ourselves, and that's why we will follow these people who will, you know, point to a bad guy or give us free money or whatever. But it's so interesting because that's the entire point of Bitcoin. The protocol, in my opinion, is the realization that we cannot trust ourselves, which is fine. That's why we have a protocol that just is. And you have the choice to adopt it and follow the rules or not. And you stay in a system where you follow the rulers, right? So actually, when you look at it from George's point of view, we cannot trust ourselves. That's, I would say, cementing the Bitcoin thesis in a sense.
So that's actually what I see. Like even his arguments were, in other words, you're going to have less and less people that are going to be able to trick in the existing system. And over time, it's going to transition and more people are going to see that the system based on rules that can't be fucked with, imposes that. Now,
you cannot trick because you have to prove, right?
Exactly.
Like in Bitcoin, you have to prove. Like there's no tricking.
He's right. If you could make it non-decentralized and secure, or you could create paper Bitcoin everywhere else, he's right. The humans will do that, and they'll do everything they can to try to take power. In fact, that's what Ethereum is, right? Vitalik was on Bitcoin before, but that's what Ethereum is. That's what all of these other coins are tried to do. That's what Bitcoin Cash is. A whole bunch of people that were the had more power in the old system decided to do a change, so that they could aggregate more control.
It's the ego. I am better.
Yeah. So the beautiful thing about that is we have a pretty good long history, and more. If you mess with it, you're the one that gets killed, right? The protocol keeps on moving. It
also allows you to mess with it, right? Like Bitcoin Cash, try it out.
Go crazy. And those people that end up doing it, they get liquidated. And the coins of Bitcoin get redistributed to a whole bunch of honest brokers that are holding. So in that discussion too, I would say it was interesting to me too. And I like George. I think over time he's come a long way in Bitcoin already. And I think just like everybody, it's easy to think, even for myself, it's easy to think I always knew all these answers. And I didn't, right?
Yeah.
You have to go through the work to be able to understand. And once you do, you think everybody else should know. And they're going through their own work.
Which is, again, ego, right? Yeah. It's funny. Once you see Bitcoin, I'd say, and all these things that are attached to this, it's like the same things coming back all the time. Actually, interesting, yesterday, I will publish this in like two, 3 weeks, but yesterday was the fake BlackRock ETF pump. Yeah. And you saw people talk about, all these people got liquidated because they were leveraged and blah, blah. And then again, I think, but then you don't deserve to own Bitcoin. This is the whole thing. This is the essence, right? Yep. If you try to fuck around, you will get burned because this thing doesn't care. And this was a prime example of that.
Matt O'Dell's Stay Humble and Stack Sats is just perfect.
That's it. All right. So how do you think, the like moral fabric of society could change if, the principles behind Bitcoin or the deflationary economics would actually be adopted? Like, does it address any like existential issues that humans have, you think?
Yeah, all of them. Literally does. It's that big a change. I said this probably thousands of times. But if you just ask, we're living in two systems right now, and where you spend time will matter for your life. But think about what the world would look like on a dishonest ledger that had to become more dishonest over time, and you were living in that dishonest ledger. And the incentives accrued against that dishonest ledger. Who would win? Who would lose? Who would win? Who would lose? What would the world look like? It would just be a mirror reflection of all the actions of the world on top of a dishonest ledger. It's really simple.
Yeah.
And then ask yourself, so that's the world you live in today, or most people live in today. And when they're looking at the news or the governments or looking at all of the, or giant companies or that are operating on top of that dishonest ledger, that's what you're seeing. And ask yourself, what would the world look like on an honest ledger? What would it look like on something that drove the incentives to the productive capacity, to productive people in the world instead of the rent seekers? What would that world look like? What would you see different? And so which world you want to see depends on what ledger. Because that's really, if you wanted to simplify Bitcoin, that's what it is.
Yeah.
You have a dishonest ledger or an honest ledger. What would you expect to see inside both of them, it literally changes everything. It changes when it's when people say Bitcoin fixes the world, it's not hyperbole. It changes everything.
Yeah, and it's actually the I would say like the counter arguments, quote unquote, of people who say, you know, when you say something like this, fix the money, fix the world, that it's such a big thing, and like you're just trying to have the price go up, etc. But it's just bigger than that. Like I'm also really working and trying to figure out like how can I start these, I almost want to say like bigger conversations that are not even about Bitcoin, right? Like Bitcoin is a solution, but first people have to understand what they are actually, you know, operating in and what the system is, and that they don't know a lot of things, right?
Yeah. I haven't seen, as people kind of talk about the problems in the existing world that they're worried about, most of the if you just went number down 1 to 10, I haven't seen one of those things that Bitcoin doesn't solve.
Yeah, I agree.
Every one of them. And then if you went 10 to 20, it would solve those too. And it solves them because the incentives run our lives and incentives run the world. Like, but think about in this existing system, people are working harder and harder and harder every year for less and less and less.
Yeah.
Well, when the world should look the opposite. They should be getting more and more naturally as a result, not just in their technology things, in houses and everything, all prices. So people, even some people that have read my book, think I'm just talking about technology, but technology is in everything. Technology is, we don't build houses like we did 50 years ago. We don't have supply chains like we did 50 years. Technology is in energy, technology is everywhere. So yeah. All of these things would be falling to the marginal cost of production.
Yeah. So do you think there are any like spiritual or philosophical teachings that resonate with the core principles of Bitcoin?
I think all of these things, whether it's philosophy, I think if you kind of, or religions, I think they're ultimately a level of consciousness, and science and are different ways up the mountain, different insights. And at the top of the mountain, it all looks the same. But if you're midway up the mountain and looking across, you can't see kind of the other person's viewpoint. You can't see lower across. I think these things merge, and I think they merge because everything's energy. I think everything's quantum. That means the universe is quantum, and that means we are quantum as well. And I think these things merge over time. And if you think about Bitcoin as a peer-to-peer internet bounded by energy, it allows us to rise in consciousness as a result of moving in that world. Now, I know that would be really hard to see for people, and it's a big concept that I just talked about, and I gave it 2 seconds. But if you were angry, the mirror reflection of around people in your life, you'd see anger. You couldn't, it's really hard for you to see love, right? Mm-hmm. If you had apathy, you wouldn't see, nothing would trigger you. In different levels of consciousness, you wouldn't be able to see your level of consciousness is describing the world you see back at you. And I think over time, Bitcoin allows a rise in consciousness of the world.
Yeah. Well, I fully agree. I also believe everything is a quantum. And as you said, a peer-to-peer network of energy, that sounds like humans also, right?
Yep, so totally.
Bitcoin is a fractal of the same thing, just like, this could be a whole nother conversation, by the way. But I want to say like, yeah, just like everything is a fractal of the same thing. With the structures that exists in nature and the universe and within us, etc. So do you also believe, I heard someone say this last week, which is interesting, if you follow this, right, and you are into this and you believe this, then you would probably also think that Bitcoin was a discovery and not an invention then, right? Like that it was always there in a sense.
Yep. And I buy that. I interchange those, but I lean more to discovery.
Yes. All right. So this podcast is called Bitcoin for Millennials, right? Because I think it's important to, educate my own generation that, especially in the Western world, hasn't really learned about finance, economics, etc. But you are part of another generation before us, X, born between 65 and 80. Like, what are the things that you have run into trying to explain Bitcoin to your generation?
I think it's some, so I wrote about this in the book. In times of great change, experts aren't typically who you go to because they can't, the same thing that created them being an expert, they'd seen so many things that they discounted. So when really great change comes, they discount it too, and they don't have an open and curious mind. And Bitcoin, because it'll rip everything, your belief system down, because it operates, it's the first time in human history that something existed that was decentralized and secure. Like you always, throughout our history books, something would always be co-opted because money was subordinate to laws. And if you could control the money, you could control everybody. You could tax the entire world through that control of money. So you could tax all, you could take a sliver of all human labor on top of that. So I just go, if Bitcoin was truly decentralized and secure, and that's what I did, where I did a lot of work, it would impose a totally different discipline to where we're going compared to what of all the history books and everything else that we'd ever seen, because we'd never had something like that. And so that's such a big idea. It forced me down to be curious about where I could be wrong. What could this look like? How could you kill it? What would it take? How much power would try to kill it? What would that would look like over time? And as I understood that, with an open, curious mind, I understood that, okay, assuming it does this, which I think is inevitable now, that means the future is unwritten, and it doesn't need to rely on the past rules that we created. Also, in the past, the winners write the history books,
Yes.
right? So a lot of those would be filled. A lot of our past would be filled with errors that we're making on top of a system lo that looks really different. And all of the people that were really great at understanding history and all the reasons that exists would be not very good at understanding the future for the same reason. So I have
It's again
empathy.
looking at it from the old
Exactly.
thing or what has been, right?
Yeah. And I have empathy for those people, but there's many, many in my generation and older who do one of two things: push back against all of this and not without going deep enough to understand it,
Yeah.
or just consider it's too big for them. I'm going to let somebody else decide.
The
Yeah.
millennials, maybe. Well, is it also hard then for people to, because in Bitcoin, people talk also about a lot about like sovereignty, and also we talk about, when you try to find things or triggers for people to actually go down the rabbit hole. It actually you instantly take on a certain type of responsibility, right? Because when you say like I live in a system that I didn't choose to live in, I'm a subject of it, I want to change it. Okay, now I have a problem, right? If I want to figure this out. So do you think that's also a thing that it's hard for people nowadays to take that agency and ownership in a sense?
I think that's just, I think as more and more incentives accrue to the new system, to be able to do that, more
Yeah,
and more people will take it. It'll also get
that makes
easier
sense.
too. So we have to remember that
like lower the bar for them.
Yeah, exactly. But and we also have to remember that when you're explaining Bitcoin, like we are explaining now, and we haven't gone deep into the technical realm, but for people who have, a lot of society just doesn't have the time or inclination to be able to do that. So it's just they trust institutions because they think there's safety in trusting an institution to do them that for them. And I keep asking myself, how could regulation on top of a system that needs to steal your money work? Right? How could regulation to protect your money from a system on that's designed to steal it work? But many people wouldn't be there, so they just trust the institution. They trust their bank. They trust all of these things.
Yeah, that's a fallacy, of course.
And it's fallacy, and so they don't go down this. But when you're talking a protocol type of technology like Bitcoin, it's TCP/IP, the base layer, and then you remember you can't see what's available on the next layer until it's in front of you. And then you can't see the types of businesses or the types of value that can be built for on top of it until lots of entrepreneurs go and use that technology to create really valuable things. I just understand how early we are in this process and how early we are in the world understanding this, because it's those entrepreneurs and that all of those things are going to make products and services and everything else that ease the onboarding of billions of people onto Bitcoin in a way more simple understanding than they understand now. So we don't have, if you look around, I don't remember the last internet conference.
Right? True.
But in the 90s, you used to have them.
Well, I went to the Bitcoin conference last week.
And that's why I said, like now, right now we're still in the Bitcoin conference stage of this, as people are trying to teach the technology and how to do this. And as it becomes simpler and easier, and as it offers more use cases for people, you'll have people coming onto this and not even understanding how Bitcoin has made their life so much better.
Do you then see these new developments like CBDCs as a threat and a distraction, probably? Well, it'll lower the bar, right? If they say you will get $100 or €100 if you install this, CBDC wallet. So
but again, what will happen to those €100? They'll have to be inflated faster. You'll have to of these things.
But it does extend the lifetime of the...
I think those types of things actually accelerate Bitcoin. I think number, we don't have enough time to go into it right now, but there is no way in that a free market can work. There's no way. So we sit on top of a free market.
Yep.
So if the entire global market said, it's all CBDCs, and we control the market globally, and then each country inside those CBDCs played to the same rules, how would that work?
Yeah. Right?
There is living standards would have to go down precipitously and all over the world, because where would the money come from to be able to do that? So the notion of a CBDC being able to work in globally, I'm not saying it won't be tried, but all of these things are just, I would say, out of the existing system. All of these things are totally natural. So is war. So is expanding, because you need to convince your people that it's somebody else's fault, and that's how you do it. So all of these things are natural out of the existing system. I just kind of said, okay, why am I even talking about that? Let's just move to how fast we can build the parallel system with way better benefits. And so billions of people can move on.
Yeah, I fully agree. I think it's also because those are the things that people also see, perhaps, right? Yeah. So it's like you can ignore it, but perhaps addressing it, well, maybe if you address it, you legitimize it, but it's a thin line, right?
Well, somebody came to me with the same question on a conference and effectively as a reason not to get into Bitcoin. And I said, okay, so your reason for not getting into Bitcoin is you're fearful that governments will stop you from getting into Bitcoin, And you're going to wait for them to do that? I said, like, they are
still points.
Like, it's yeah. so insane, right? So, yeah. so in other words, you're making that happen through your actions. Yeah. And while they're screaming at you and they're saying, get out of the burning building right now, because we're yeah. going to lock up your money forever.
Yes.
And they're staying stuck out of fear of the thing, and out of fear of the thing that saves them from it. It's so I do understand, though, some people will do that, but yeah. But it's crazy.
Yeah. All right. Last question. I ask everyone the same question. What's a core belief that you will never let go?
Oh, I got lots of those, but I would say integrity. And why I say that is I used to this was a core belief in my business, and a bunch of financiers said that can't be a core belief because everybody has to have that in business. And I said and I believe a core belief is something you'd stand up for no matter what, even if you lost everything. And I said back to them, I said, if everyone had that in business, the world would look very different. And so that would be one of them. Curiosity is another, empathy is another, but.
Thanks for sharing. I really enjoyed this conversation. Thanks also again for coming on. What's the best way that people who don't know you yet, where they can follow you and read your thoughts?
Probably just my website, jeffbooth.ca. And the reason I say that specifically too is there's too many scammers out there that are using different. I'm not on Instagram, I'm not on Facebook, other different things. So they're taking copies. If my profile isn't listed on my site, my social media profile, then it's not me. So beware. So jeffbooth.ca is probably best.
Great. Keep in touch, and perhaps we talk again.
You bet, Bram. Thanks.
I hope you enjoyed this episode. If you did, it would be amazing if you could rate, review, and subscribe on the podcast platform of your choice. It will help us educate more millennials on the importance of Bitcoin. You can follow and connect with me on Twitter. I'm Bram K. That's @BRAMK. And if you are or know someone who has an interesting perspective on Bitcoin that's worth sharing, hit me up. I read and reply to every single message. I appreciate your support and hope you'll be here for the next episode. Thanks for listening. Bye.